This is a Nightlife crime podcast.
20 years ago, Melbourne solicitor Keith Allen found his business was in financial trouble and he was desperate to find a solution. He put his hopes in his business manager to help him out. But it was a decision that ultimately cost him his life. While three men have been jailed for Mr. Allen's murder, the whereabouts of his body unfortunately remains a mystery. Emily Webb's a journalist, author and co-host of the Australian True Crime Podcast, and she joins us now to untangle the grisly web that Mr. Allen became entangled in. Emily, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a bit about Keith Allen and his life as a solicitor. Was he a high flyer?
No, Keith wasn't a high flyer. He had a couple of suburban law practices in Melbourne, and he certainly was quite a social man. But as his brother Lyle described to me, Keith wasn't very good with money. He was quite, like, not great at keeping up with the bookkeeping and put a lot of trust in his staff, which you'd imagine is fine, but he put a lot of trust in his law clerk, Julian Clark, and that proved to be cost him his life, essentially.
Yeah, that's right, because about 5 years before he was killed, he hired a bloke, this is the bloke you're talking about, called Julian Clark. He hired a bloke to work for him as a conveyancing clerk. Now, Clark was then made a co-signatory to Mr. Allen's firm's trust account. Now, this is where all clients' money goes, doesn't it, while it's waiting for house settlements and all that sort of thing.
That's right.
He was effectively his business manager, but instead of properly managing the business, what was he actually doing?
Well, Julian Clark had quite a gambling problem. He was a high flyer, Julian Clark, or he liked to think he was. He was actually a regular visitor to Melbourne's Crown Casino and was actually a member of the Mahogany Room, which is the place set aside for people who are betting a lot of money. So he was helping himself to the money from this trust account. And Keith was none the wiser because Keith put all his trust in Julian, but also really wasn't across, you know, things as he probably could have been. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as his brother said, he just was very trusting and quite naive in many ways.
Mm. How much did Julian Clark eventually steal?
It was in the, I think, it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. There was certainly at least $100,000 that was noticeably missing. And so the there was actually going to be an investigation into the law firm. Investigators were going to come in and have a look. And that correspondence was going to Julian Clark. And that information wasn't being fed up to Keith until really it was in the days before his death that Keith became aware that the firm was in real trouble, and he'd actually confided to his brother Lyle, look, you know, we're really in trouble here. And it wasn't the first time that Lyle had kind of had this conversation with his brother Keith, because a few years back Keith had made an investment into a stud farm that had gone wrong, and his brother Lyle had actually bailed him out for $150,000 from that investment. And Keith himself did like to have a bit of a flutter, but he didn't gamble the big amounts that his law clerk Julian Clark was doing.
Mm. Yeah, the Law Institute, which is the sort of governing body of lawyers in Victoria, begins investigating Mr. Allen's firm, doesn't they? And they, in August 1999, they hear of a complaint involving the possible theft of a $75,000 check. So Mari Ryans, an accountant working for the Law Institute, goes out for a chat, and she's told that the account's key paperwork is missing. You might have thought that the doo-doo was about to hit the fan in a big way here, but Julian Clark is quite cool and calm and collected about the whole matter, isn't he? He says, "Oh well, I'll help you try and sort it out."
Yeah, he was a real ducker and diver and had an answer for everything. So the inspector who came from the Law Institute, you know, requested these records. So basically, what Julian Clark knew, obviously, if he handed those over, he's going to get found out for this theft of this money, and it was substantial amounts of money. And so really his plan then was actually to murder Keith, his boss. So that's that. He went from that to that. So
why did he think that was a plan?
Well, he just wanted to hide the gambling-related debts. He was quite desperate, and I think, you know, he knew that the game was up because the Law Institute were now involved. I mean, if the Law Institute hadn't become involved, I think he probably could have kept, deceiving Keith. But eventually, you know, people were going to be asking questions, so he really knew that he was in a lot of trouble.
Mm. But why did he think that killing Keith would be the solution to his problems, though?
Well, I think he was just desperate. I don't actually really think he thought it through. But what he did do, and it was very calculated, he actually wrote a letter. He started to set up a bit of a scenario. And he wanted to set up the scenario that Keith had killed himself, had disappeared and killed himself. So he wanted to try and put the blame onto Keith for mismanagement of the money and take attention from himself. And he actually started to sort of have conversations with people to try and set this scenario up, and actually had written a letter to Keith, kind of urging Keith to come clean, so to speak, about what happened with the money, and that he needed to kind of fess up to the Law Institute. So he was really trying to push all that attention off himself and make it look like it was Keith who was, taking the money out of the trust account. And then he told Keith, on the other hand, that he thought there might be someone who might be able to help them out with their financial trouble. And because Keith's so trusting, he went along with Julian Clark, and that was on the last night of his life.
Mm. Because, in fact, Julian Clark had hired a hitman, hadn't he? He'd stolen more money from the trust account to pay for the hitman.
That's correct.
So on the night in question, in May 2000, Julian Clark persuades Mr. Allen to go and meet a so-called mate of his who can help them. Where do they go?
They actually stop off, strangely. Keith's last seen at a service station in a suburb of Melbourne in East Keilor, which wasn't far from one of his law practices. So he went to that service station. They'd driven there separately. So Keith had driven his Mercedes there. And the CCTV shows that there's two men there, and which was Keith and his friend Costas Athanasi.
Mm-hmm.
And what they think's happened is that Keith's got out, going to meet this friend, and then the third man, which was the hitman that Julian Clark had taken $70,000 out of the trust account to pay for these services, Pseudo Kavkik. They believe that Pseudo Kavkik was there ready and waiting with a gun and abducted Keith at gunpoint.
Wow, and shot and, well, killed him, probably by shooting him. And,
yes, that's what's believed.
Yeah. There's a mystery about where his body is, though, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the great sadness besides, obviously, his brother's death. So I got to know Lyle Allen, who is Keith's brother. I've got to know him quite well, and I spoke to him for my book. And he's just desperate to know where his brother's buried. So, but these three men who are now in jail for the murder of Keith Allen, they will not reveal where the body is. And in Victoria, there is a no body, no parole law.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people, I guess, who are willing to wait out time in jail, or, have the risk of no parole, because I guess if Lyle believes that if they say where the body is, they're admitting their guilt, and they'd maintain that they were not guilty all throughout.
Mm. How were they caught? They were sort of caught in rather quite bizarre circumstances, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. It was really interesting. And I think this goes to just really good policing. So two uniformed police officers who were driving around the streets early the next morning. So Keith had gone to meet Julian Clark on the Sunday, late the Sunday night. And so this was in the early hours of the Monday morning. And during this time, Keith lived with his brother, Lyle. So Lyle had given Keith a call to say, where are you? They'd been out for dinner the night earlier. Keith was going to drive a friend of his home, and Lyle just couldn't get onto him, and he thought it was strange. But then what happens is Lyle gets a call. They get a call at the house at 3 a.m., and it's the police, and they're asking if Keith is at home. And Lyle goes to check, and Keith is not in his bedroom. So what had actually happened is two police officers had noticed they were just on duty. They were being curious. They'd noticed a white Jaguar car that had New South Wales number plates driving past them, and they were in the area of suburb called Laverton in Melbourne. And, they noticed that this car was driving to an unlit part of a street. So they followed, and the car pulled up near a blue Mercedes, which was Keith's car, but it was being driven by Kavkik, who was the man
that
was hired. Because
they were trying to dispose of the car, I presume. This is Keith Allen's car, right?
Yeah, their plan was to, police believe, the plan was to burn the car to get rid of any evidence. The police are asking Kavkik, why have you got the Mercedes? He's given a fake name and address. He said, my friend Keith lent me the car. We'd met each other on a pub crawl, and we're friends now. But Lyle disputes that because, for one thing, his brother was a teetotaler and would never have been on a pub crawl. And it was proven that Keith was never in that vicinity of the hotel that Kavkik said they were in. And so basically the police think, this is a bit strange, and they're checking the car. And they find shovels which have fresh soil on them, and they also find a tin of lighter fluid, petrol. Keith's mobile phone and his wallet are in the car, a loaded pistol, and there's also tests revealed that there were little flecks of blood, of Keith's blood, that were on Kavkik's trouser leg and sock. So, yeah, it's looking. Yeah, it's absolutely looking like Keith's been murdered. But where he is the eternal question now.
Yeah, it's very sad, isn't it? Because that's right. There's some belief that he might have been buried at some point near a tip. But although there seemed to be a freshly dug hole there, there wasn't any other forensic evidence that would link, and certainly the body's not there.
No, and they did look at Kavkik's mobile phone to see where he'd travelled to, and they found a few points around that they thought it might be. But, I mean, it would be, as they say, trying to find a needle in a haystack. I mean, if they're not giving any other information, it's going to be hard to find. And Lyle certainly doesn't hold out a lot of hope that they'll find Keith, but he really, really wants to. He's getting older. His health's not great. Their mother, they were devoted to their mother, and their mother sadly died not long after Keith had disappeared. And, so Lyle lost his brother and his mother in the space of a very short time.
Yes, anyway. And as you say, strangely, given the compelling nature of the case against them, they don't admit their guilt, and they will not reveal the whereabouts of Keith Allen's body, which is so...
not at all. And they had an appeal in 2009. It was refused. So they're doing their sentences, and they will not say where Keith is. And I just think it's incredibly cruel.
Exactly. Emily, good to talk. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.